the Ulysses, man's greatest achievement, a ship capable of traveling to distant galaxies. But a freak accident leaves the ship helpless. Its AI, damaged, dangerous, plays a deadly game with the two surviving members of the crew. If they indulge the machine's newfound passion for science fiction and fantasy trivia, it will permit limited access to the astrogation matrix in Star Drive. For astronauts Clive Ashenden and Rob Wickens, the choice is clear. If they ever want to see Earth again, they must define the A to Z of SFF.
A is for Altered States. Movie. Continue.
Oh, far out, man. We're in the realms of chemical overstimulation and the strange exploration of the inner workings of the human mind here with Ken Russell's film adaptation of Paddy Chayefsky's novel.
Yeah, 1980. Not only Paddy Chayefsky's novel, but Paddy Chayefsky's script. Although you wouldn't know it because Paddy Chayefsky fell out with Ken Russell and took his name off it. So he's actually credited as Sidney Aaron on the film itself. But it is his script and, from his 1978 novel.
Indeed. It's kind of that spat was always a bit of a strange one because Ken Russell was on record as kind of saying that he basically just fired the script pretty much as it was written down. And Paddy Chayefsky was saying that he kind of didn't believe that for whatever reason. I mean, there was, obviously when you hire Ken Russell for a movie, I guess there is an element of you have to realize what you're going to get there. But even so, it's a fairly significant falling out, isn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting one really because Ken Russell, as I understand it, came on very late to the project because originally Arthur Penn was attached to direct, and then for whatever reason he got removed from the project very late in the day. I've listened to some interviews with certain actors who suggested that perhaps due to his schedule he wasn't able to sort of prep the effects work in the way that was sort of needed so that they felt they had to get someone else in. But certainly Ken Russell would seem on the face of it a good fit for the material. Despite his sort of enfant terrible reputation, he had a record of working with extreme subject matter and, making box office hits out of that. So
definitely.
you could see why he was picked.
He's commonly known as a supreme visual stylist, but to a certain extent, he kind of reins that back a little bit in Altered States. Although obviously when things go crazy, they go really, really, really crazy. And even today, even in this, the 27th, 28th century, where we're viewing back from, it's got some fairly impressive visual effects.
Yeah, I think they hold up quite well because often we're just getting flashes of them and it's not necessarily holding on it for a long time. And it's an interesting sort of mashup of lots of different techniques. And I think it's pretty effective, but before we sort of go headlong down the rabbit hole, perhaps we should just sort of sketch in the plot of Altered States.
So William Hurt, in his first starring role, actually plays a doctor who is exploring the inner reaches of the human mind. Initially as a kind of medical technique, but as he goes sort of further down the rabbit hole, as Clive just said, he finds himself exploring different native techniques in terms of drug use and the use of immersion techniques and isolation techniques to unlock areas of the human minds that have previously been locked, as it were. And in that process, finds himself transforming, not just mentally, but physically.
Yeah, so you have this kind of this scientific quest for knowledge, this obsession that is growing with William Hurt's character Eddie Jessup, which we follow his journey, but we're also, there is the kind of subplot of Eddie Jessup's sort of his relationship with the woman who becomes his wife, Emily Jessup, played by Blair Brown, who is a, you know, like him, is a sort of is a scientist undergraduate, albeit you know, specializing in a different area, and sort of falls headlong for him. And it's an interesting one, because it's clear he's very much a sort of an odd duck. He's a very cerebral, you know, to the point, and you know, his social skills are a bit rough, aren't they, should we say. I mean, you could almost say he was slightly on the autism spectrum, but that's probably putting it a bit strongly. He's just not very good with feelings, I think is perhaps a way to put it. But she quickly finds out that he's a very strange guy, because during their first sexual encounter together, he has an ecstatic vision of crucifixions, and
what's so unusual, you know, about that?
Well, not if you're in a Ken Russell movie, I guess, no. But. And then he ends up sort of telling her how, as a child, he had these mystical visions where he was seeing saints and angels and Jesus, and until the point where his father died, in which point he lost his faith and the visions went away. But it seems that ability to sort of tap into this you know, ecstatic kind of strange transformational sort of part of his mind.
It's a dream state almost, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of there sort of nagging away at him, you know, and as he's grown up and sort of, you know, turned his mind to science, now he wants to understand it. Now he wants to sort of develop it. And yeah, so you get that. And then, you know, and then you've got some really nice sort of, character actors backing them up. We got Bob Balaban, not, you know, long removed from being on Close Encounters of the Third Kind, as Arthur Rosenberg, who's sort of his best friend, and you know, Charles Hayde as Mason Parrish, who's the sort of voice of reason, you know, amongst their sort of group of scientific friends, you know, who's a doctor who's forever sort of patching him up and sort of, you know, shaking his head at this sort of craziness, you know.
Indeed. And as Eddie goes through his journey of discovery, he does become increasingly dinged up and smashed around, to the point where he does actually start to transform, initially into a kind of ape creature, and, you know, he kind of regresses and then sort of goes completely the other way and turns into this strange kind of fiery future thing.
Well, is it a fiery future thing, or is it even further back than that sort of first ape thing? It's kind of different, because he keeps talking about trying to reach that sort of first man. The sort of that's the sort of question there, really, because it's a bit sort of, it's ambiguous. And in one way, I can see what Chomsky's problem is with Russell's treatment of this, because Russell is very much, I think, a sort of a sensualist, and is really, you know, his films are fleshy, they're earthy, they're sexual,
yes.
And which works really well for the William Hurt, Blair Brown stuff, but. I wonder if it's a good fit for the kind of cerebral part of some of the script here with that Chersky sort of lays down. I mean, you know, if you think about sort of Chersky is the writer of things like the network and the hospital, and it's, I mean, this is a bit of a departure for him, but in a way, this is almost more following in the vein of sci-fi like a 2001, you know, where it's sort of, whereas that sort of saying, okay, what is the, you know, what is the next step of human evolution, and you know how is it we were able to make these evolutionary jumps?
I mean, it does tie into that very kind of cerebral 1970s science fiction kind of thing that, you know, movies like, say, well, Phase 4 jumps immediately to mind for that sort of weird visual aesthetic. But again, you know, the whole sort of thing about kind of exploring inner space as opposed to outer space, which you saw an awful lot of in 70s SF, both in novels, you know, people like Robert Silverberg writing about that kind of thing, and in the movies as well.
Yeah, I that is very much a sort of follow on from the 60s, isn't it? That sort of, you know, I guess Aldous Huxley sort of doors of perception idea.
Yeah.
You know, that you, I mean, obviously that is, you know, about his experience of taking mescaline, but the idea that, you know, I think in sort of science of that time, there was a bit of a crossover into some sort of science, and also a sort of melding with some ideas from psychology as well.
Hmm.
You know, this seems to me to sort of tap into this like Jungian idea that we have a collective unconscious. You know, that there are universal human experiences that can be tapped if you can just find the right key. So and obviously being a scientist, and they're trying to do this in a with the drug which they get from from the Amazon, don't they?
So. Yeah, it's from South American tribes. So he actually takes a trip out there, and it takes a trip in every sense of the word, really.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the I wonder if say like a sort of a filmmaker who is a bit more of a sort of cold visual stylist, perhaps like a Kubrick or a Cronenberg, might have brought out certain of the ideas a bit more, but Ken really plays to his strengths, and as you say, I mean, visually it just sort of is. I think it's brilliant. It's a great kind of assault on you, and you know, works really well with the score. And I think what he does do is this could easily get bogged down, because there's a lot of scientific talk. There's a lot of you know, sort of philosophical talk, but he keeps it moving, you know. You know, and also it helps to get across the idea that these are smart people, because, you know, they're, it's like rat-a-tat-tat, you know. It's almost like, it sort of reminded me a bit of something like The Social Network, where they're talking really fast, you know, in their own particular jargon. And if there's something that's slightly frustrating about that, is that certain ideas get thrown out and they just kind of get thrown to one side. You know, it's sort of they get toyed with and then they move on. Then move on to the next thing. But I mean, obviously, that's.
Well, I mean, that's kind of part of the way Eddie actually works, isn't he? He's very unscientific in a lot of ways, in the way he's sort of chasing down this inner truth. He'll kind of take a path, play around with it. Oh no, that doesn't work. Let's try something else. And he's always kind of trying different approaches and throwing new things into the mix.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. But you get these sort of interesting kind of ideas which they don't really develop, like things like the idea that they talk about how a lot of schizophrenics, you know, talk about religious iconography in their sort of delusions. And the idea that perhaps, you know, medieval mystics and saints. Perhaps they, perhaps they were schizophrenic, but they don't go into that. It's just sort of laid out there, because the schizophrenic part is very much his first sort of experiments with a flotation tank.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, no, it's this is a strange one, and it's quite a singular film. And I like the idea that this was like a big studio film that came out. It seems incredible, but that was it does feel like an end of that sort of 1970s era of filmmaking where you could have a film like this come out under a studio banner.
Yeah, definitely.
Obviously this is post Star Wars, post Jaws, post Close Encounters, so. You know, we're already moving into that blockbuster territory, which obviously is going to take over and change the sort of landscape of American cinema. But it seems there's still room for a few interesting bits and pieces like this. Just a few years down the road, you get something like Brain Scan, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Which again covers kind of the same sort of. Certainly the same sort of territory and kind of again sort of playing around with different kinds of tech of reasonably new technology at the time. You know, flotation tanks were almost kind of trendy back in the very early 80s when Altered States was made. And you know, same again with brain scan that was kind of taking early computer technology and doing it. But what you've also got with those two films is this whole notion of this sort of exploration of love as well. Love is really what brings William Hurt back from the brink of wherever he's going,
which makes it actually quite a sweet movie in the end. But it's a bit, I don't know if I'm totally convinced, because I think William Hurt is very good casting for this, because I think he's very good at playing those sort of slightly off characters. You absolutely buy that she's obsessed with him, but I don't know that I ever totally feel that, you know, that he feels as much for her, but yeah, it brings him back from wherever the hell they both end up.
I mean, the whole movie is about transformation in a way, and there's no reason that part of the process that he goes through is the realization that actually he does feel more for his wife than he did initially.
Yeah, he opens up. I mean, this is the story also takes place over several years, which I think it's difficult to get that across. You know, 1 minute they're courting, then they're married, then the next scene they're divorcing. Because it moves along at a fair clip, which is good, but you know, almost like you barely get to take a breath, and then it feels like we're on to the next transformation scene then. So I think perhaps this is a film that rewards, you know, multiple viewings, you know, that you're going to get more out of it, because the first time it's just going to sort of bombard you. And then after that, you're going to sort of pull more out of it, you know.
Yeah, I'd absolutely agree with that. I think Ken Russell can be quite subtle in the way that he'll put layers and layers of meaning sort of underneath all the storm and drang and all the fireworks that he layers in there. But I agree with you. I think at the end it is a very sweet movie, and I think that it is about the transformative and healing power of love. I mean, I know that probably sounds quite soppy, but that's what I take from it, certainly.
No, I agree with that, and I think Ken Russell perhaps has got a bit of a bad reputation, I think, because of certain of his later movies, and just because of his kind of because of his reputation as this sort of big character, you know, which rather overshadows some of his films, and that and the fact that, you know, and his sort of his drinking, which became more of an issue, I think, towards the latter part of his life. But we should really emphasise that this is before that he almost becomes a bit of a parody of himself with things like The Lair of the White Worm and sort of his later shot on video movies. You know, he's still working at the peak of his powers, I think, here.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, he was always a director that liked to explore the boundaries and liked to sort of play around on the outskirts, and it's kind of a testament to his talent as a filmmaker that he could do that and still work within the studio system and still get these expensive movies made that still have a fantastic reputation, like hundreds of years down the line. And you know, that's great.
Yep, and you know, the fact that. Okay, it's got these names behind it, but you know, essentially, he's made a film about sex and drug taking for a major studio that's got a big release. So, okay, you know, they've sold it off the back of it being this horror movie and this sci-fi movie. But hey, that's essentially what it is, folks.
Yep, and all the more powerful for that. We here on the Ulysses heartily recommend Altered States. Cyclomedia, do you like it?
Input. Satisfactory.
And that gives me a warm glow deep inside. Talk about the transformative power of love. Altered States has switched on our engines again. So that's far out, man. That's cool and groovy. Clive, fire us up. Take us away.
Oh. Okay, sitting in coordinates for the doors of perception. 3, 2, 1, let's go now.
Far out.
The A to Z of SFF was written and performed by Rob Wickings and Clive Ashenden. The show was produced and edited by Rob Wickings at All Hallows Post of Reading. The finest sound available anywhere. Would you like to know more? Go to www.theatozofsff.com. Like us on Facebook as the A to Z of SFF, or follow us on Twitter at the A to Z of SFF.